The apparition turned to the spectators, spoke about himself and assured them of its presence. His language and his resolute manner made a deep impression on everyone. His voice was carried throughout the room by the megaphone, and several photographs of the vision were obtained. DRS. Assumption and Mendonca now approached the shrouded figure and subjected it to an examination that lasted for 15 minutes and furnished evidence that they had before them an anatomically normal human being, possessed of all of its natural organs. The scholars who were present vouched for this with their signatures. 226. After the materialized spirit had shaken hands with the participants, it announced that it was about to disappear. It soared through the air like an airplane. Its feet vanished first, followed by the legs and the abdomen. Only the chest, arms and head were still visible. Dr. Archimedes Mendonca, who, like all the rest, had watched the process with intense interest, approached the still materialized torso, and reached for it. He instantly fell to the floor unconscious, while the vision vanished entirely. When Dr. Mendonca came to in an adjoining room, he declared that he had felt a sticky mass between his fingers before he passed out. On waking, Mirabeau was greatly exhausted. His bonds were found to be intact, as were the seals on the doors and windows. The report of the investigating committee contains 34 illustrations, the first three of which show the conditions under which the experiment was carried out, the manner in which Mirabeau was bound, and the supervision exercised by the committee. A particularly remarkable photograph is the one showing Mirabeau, dressed in white, in the midst of the 14 members of the investigating committee. His forearms are dematerialized, nothing being visible of the left one and only a faint blur of the right. Most interesting of all, however, are the 18 photographs of the spirit materializations, most of which show the materialized figure and the medium together on the same plate. In a few instances the apparition was photographed alone. In several others, the materialized spirit is seated at the table with the medium and the persons conducting the test and looks for all the world like a living member of the committee. As the editor of the Zeitschrift für Parapsychologie aptly remarks, in the face of the testimony of so comprehensive a body of witnesses and in the face of such a meticulously conducted investigation, we do not have the right to simply ignore this new and powerful testimony for the genuineness of mediumistic phenomena. If we go over the report about the phenomena produced through the medium Mirabeau in the light of the laws governing orders set down in this book, we can understand it all without difficulty. Everything proceeds in accordance with immutable laws. Whether the phenomena occur in Europe, America or any other continent, or whether they happened in ancient or modern times, the appearance of the three men to Abraham, the materialization of the angel Raphael to Tobias, the materialization of Christ after his resurrection, and countless other spirit materializations are brought about governed by the same laws as were the Mirabeau materializations described here, the only difference between the former. 227. Materializations and Mirabeau's is that in the case of the materialization of God's high spirits, the source of the odd for the materialization is not mentioned, whereas for the materializations that took place in Brazil, Mirabeau, as the medium, was the chief source of odd, and most of the participants at the seances were sufficiently mediumistic so that they could contribute odd without entering into a trance. Elsewhere, mention has been made of the important fact that when the high spirits are called upon to deliver messages to mankind at God's behest, the necessary odd is placed at their disposal in unlimited amounts, so that they are not dependent on human mediums. Nevertheless, the laws according to which they communicate remain the same. Mirabeau is speaking and writing in the many languages foreign to him and on the most varied range of subjects are the work of the various spirit beings that employ him merely as an instrument. The reports are brought about by the spirit world, which, with the aid of the medium's odic power, produces the power currents required for dissolving and recondensing matter. The materialization and dematerialization of spirits are effected through application of those same currents and utilization of the medium's odd and physical substance. Unfortunately, the German excerpt of the Brazilian report fails to state how much weight the medium lost during the duration of the materialization of the spirits. The stunning shocks suffered by those who touched a phantom in the process of dematerialization came from the odic power currents by which the dematerialization was affected. Had anyone attempted to touch a materialization in the process of formation, he would have felt the same influence of the power currents. After materialization is complete, these currents are turned off, and the apparitions can be touched without adverse effects. The presence in the materialized spirit beings of all the organs of a human body is explained by the fact that a spirit possesses these organs in spirit form. It only has to condense them sufficiently with the aid of humanoid to make them visible in the materialized figure of a human body. Indeed, the same process took place in the case of Mirabe'e himself, when he vanished out of the seance room through its closed doors and was later found lying in another room. His disappearance from a locked room was possible only by virtue of the dissolution of his material body into an odic one, which was rematerialized into solid matter in an adjoining room, in the same manner and according to the same laws as with the materialized spirits. The pleasant fragrance of the odd of the high spirits in contrast to the corpse-like smell accompanying the materialized low spirits is sufficiently explained by what was said about the smell of odd in the chapter on odd. 228. Clairvoyance at a deathbed. Zeitschrift für Parapsychologie, 1927, pp. 475-477. A man from San Francisco relates the things he witnessed for 5 hours at the bedside of his dying wife. His report is as follows. Was I subject to an illusion, or had I suddenly become clairvoyant during the last 5 hours before my wife's passing? This is today a moot question for me, to which I will probably never have a satisfactory answer. Before I begin the story of this little incident, I want to state for the benefit of the reader that in my case alcoholic beverages as well as cocaine or morphine are out of the question, and I am not at all high-strung or visionary. On the contrary, I am generally considered to be cool-headed, calm and collected, and I am exceedingly skeptical about everything having to do with spiritism. As all my friends know, my wife passed away on Friday, May 23, 1902, a quarter of an hour before midnight. A few of my closest friends had gathered around her, together with the physician in the case and two registered nurses. I sat at the patient's bedside, holding her right hand in my own, and in this way 2 hours passed without any visible change. The butler came in to announce that supper was served, but no one seemed inclined to partake of any food. At about 6:30 I urgently begged my friends to eat something, as there was no telling how much longer our night vigil might last, whereupon all of them finally left the room. A quarter of an hour later I happened to glance toward the door and saw 3 separate, well-defined layers of cloud drift into the room. Each cloud seemed to be about 4 feet long and 6 or 8 inches wide. The lowest one was about 2 feet off the floor, while the others seemed to move with about 6 inches of space between them. My first thought was that some of my friends were standing outside of the bedroom smoking, and that the smoke from their cigars was blowing into the room. With this in mind I jumped up to express my indignation at their conduct. But there was nobody near the door, nor could I see anyone in the hall or in the adjoining room. Seized by astonishment, I looked back at the clouds. They floated silently toward the bed and enshrouded it completely. As I stared into the mist, I saw at my dying wife's head a female figure about 3 feet tall, transparent but like a bright beam of shining gold. It was the figure of a woman so sublime that I cannot find words to describe her in more detail. She was draped in a Grecian garment with long, wide sleeves that hung down loosely. Upon her head she wore a radiant crown. The figure stood motionless in full splendor and beauty, her hands raised above my wife. 229. Seeming to bid her welcome with a cheerful and serene expression, and radiating peace and repose. Two other figures in white knelt beside my wife, apparently leaning against her. Still other figures, more or less distinct, floated above the bed. Above my wife, but connected to her by a cord, of odd, hovered a nude white figure, apparently her odic body. For a time the person connected in this way remained perfectly still, Then she shrank in size until she was barely 18 inches tall. The Odic body was complete, with perfectly formed arms and legs. As the Odic body shrank in this way, it writhed to and fro, beat about with its arms and legs, presumably struggling to free itself and escape. It writhed to and fro until it seemed exhausted, then it grew calm, increased again in size, and the process began anew. This vision, or whatever it may have been, was before me uninterruptedly for the entire 5 hours that preceded my wife's passing. Occasional interruptions that occurred, as when I spoke with my friends or closed my eyes and turned my head aside, failed to affect the mirage in the slightest, for as soon as I looked back at the deathbed, I would see the spirit figures again. Throughout these 5 hours I had a strange feeling of oppression. A heavy load rested upon my head and limbs, while my eyes felt heavy and sleepy. During the entire time my sensations were so peculiar, and the apparitions so constant and lively, that I thought I was losing my mind. More than once I said to the physician, "Doctor, I am losing my mind." The fateful moment came at last. A gasp, the Odic body writhed to and fro, my wife stopped breathing. To all appearances she was dead, but a few moments later she began to breathe again. After she had drawn 2 breaths, everything became quiet. At the instant of her last breath the connecting cord had broken, and the Odic body vanished. The clouds and the spirit figures also disappeared immediately, and, strangely, the sensation of heaviness that had weighed upon me was gone all of a sudden. I was my own self again, cool-headed, calm and collected, and from the instant of my wife's death I was perfectly capable of making all the arrangements necessary regarding her earthly body and its burial. I must leave it to the reader to judge whether I was the victim of a hallucination brought on by grief, sorrow and exhaustion, or whether perhaps my mortal eyes had been granted a glimpse of the spirit world in all its beauty, happiness, repose and peace. 230. The deathbed experiences described above were no hallucinations, they were real. The dying woman's husband was able to see the spirit figures because 2 conditions were fulfilled. First, the husband had to have a mediumistic predisposition to clairvoyance, even though it was not fully developed in his case. Secondly, enough odd had to be present in the room to allow the spirit beings to make their figures visible. The source of the odd is to be sought primarily in the dying woman herself, for at the time of death, the odd is liberated from the body. Her husband also was able to contribute oddic force because of his mediumistic disposition. The feeling of oppression, sleepiness and exhaustion that rested upon him during those hours was caused by the surrender of his odd and consequently disappeared when the odd he had contributed flowed back into his body after the spirit apparitions had disappeared. Here, too, the odd was seen in the form of clouds, which enfolded the whole deathbed, and from which the figures of the spirits were subsequently formed. The husband's inability to see all of the figures floating above the bed clearly was due to the fact that the amount of odd on hand was not sufficient to allow all the spirits present to show themselves with equal distinctness. Spirits from the beyond surround every dying person. Generally they are deceased friends and relatives, and also the spirits that protected and guided him during his lifetime. Many dying people can themselves clairvoyantly see these spirits, for in the final hours the spirit of the dying is already partially released from the body and, hence, endowed with the power of spiritual sight, and so it recognizes the spirits present at the deathbed of those who have gone before and calls them by name. These spirits not only escort the dying into the beyond, but they also assist in freeing their souls from their bodies. Whenever a number of spirits are gathered for a definite purpose, they are under the command of a leader. In the case before us, this spirit leader was the beautiful female figure the husband saw floating above the bed of his dying wife. She supervised the work her subordinate spirit beings were called on to perform with the dying woman. The naked white figure the husband saw moving up and down above the body of his wife was the dying woman's odic body. The writhing of this odic figure, which was a perfect image of the dying woman, was caused by 231. The effort her spirit, enclosed in its odic body, had to exert to break the odic cord that still bound it to the physical body, after the rest of the Odic body had already freed itself. The husband, too, saw this Odic cord plainly. The Odic cord is very strong by nature, and is not easily broken. Special instances of clairvoyance. Zeitschrift für Parapsychologie, 1926, pages 22-25. In an article that appeared in this publication, Professor Esterayak discusses several instances of clairvoyance observed in his patient, Maria Reyes de Zed, by Dr. Pigeon Stecher, a physician living in Mexico. These were subsequently also investigated and confirmed by Mr. Prince, an American. Professor Esterayak writes about that as follows. The phenomena studied by Pigeon Stecher and Prince were primarily cases of clairvoyance and psychometry. The experiments that have been carried out in this area seem absolutely convincing, and it is, no doubt, their remarkable nature that led Pigeon Stecher, a product of the materialistic school, through his own observations, to become convinced of the existence of such phenomena. He then, one day, reported his experiences to the Mexican Association of Physicians, whereupon his colleagues shook their heads, and some of them probably began to have doubts about his mental health. Nevertheless, a committee was formed, and its members subsequently confirmed the correctness of Pigeon Stecher's observations. What, then, were the facts determined in the case of the clairvoyant, or rather, the clairsentient Maria Reyes de Zed? A. In a certain state, she had the same sensations as those felt by Drive Pigeon Stecher, who sat facing her. At such times she felt as though she were inside his organism. But this was the case only as long as Dr. Pigeon Stecher stood or sat no farther than 3 meters from her. B. On these occasions she would see a colored radiation and a luminous band that connected her with Pigeon Stecher. C. When handed a piece of a meteorite, she had the sensation of flying through space, passing alternately through hot and cold regions, and of falling into bottomless depths. D. She was handed a letter, and although its writer was unknown to her, she sensed, saw and reported what happened during the sinking of a ship, thereby describing the personality of the letter writer as accurately as though she were standing across from him on the sinking ship. She also had the sensation of sinking into the ocean and of rising to the surface again. The letter, sealed in a bottle, has been picked up at sea. 232. The explanation of the incidents related here may be found in the chapter dealing with the law of odic force. Od is the carrier not only of physical sensations, but of all spiritual ones as well. Inasmuch as the spirit of a living being is the bearer of its odic force, all of the thoughts and feelings of the spirit are expressed in corresponding vibrations of the od. At the same time, the odic vibrations of a living being are influenced not only by the thoughts and moods of its own spirit, but also by the odic vibrations of other living beings whose odic radiation it receives. When, therefore, clairsentient people come into close enough contact, in whatever way, with the odic radiation of another person, they will also feel that person's sensations in themselves. This is the law underlying the ability of certain people to feel into, empathize with, the feelings, the character, the sentiments and the fate of others. When, therefore, the clairsentient woman felt Dr. Pigeon Stecher's sensations as though she were inside his organism, it was because his odic radiation transmitted these feelings. In his case, the radiation had an effective range of only 3 meters. It was not powerful enough to influence the odic vibrations of the clairsentient woman at a greater distance. When clairsentient people experience the sensations of others, they are in a state resembling a partial trance, in which their own spirit is separated to some degree from their body. The colored band of odd the woman saw connecting her with Pigeon Stecher was his odic radiation passing over to her. The fact that all odic radiations have a color has also been brought out in the section on odd. Color also depends on odic vibrations, as do sounds, the senses of smell, taste and touch, and all other expressions of life, the moving force of which is always the spirit. All of these things are intimately connected. A meteorite, too, is a living being, as there is a spirit in everything that exists. Hence, a meteorite has its characteristic odic vibrations, which, as it flies through space, were influenced by the odic vibrations of the heavenly bodies there, as well as by its falling to immeasurable depths. All odic vibrations of a living being leave impressions upon its odd, in ways analogous to those left on a phonograph record by the vibrations of the tones of a singer, with the result that they can always be played again thereafter. The same process that takes place in more material form in the case of a phonograph record takes place spiritually when clairsentient persons replay events after coming into close enough contact with the odic record of a living being, whereby the same vibrations, and hence the same sensations, are produced in their own orders on the record in question. 233. This also explains the ability of Prajnastesha's clairsentient medium to see the fate and the personality of the writer of that letter aboard the sinking ship. It should be added, however, by way of further explanation, that the odic record of a spirit resembles not only a phonograph record but also a photographic plate, and that, in consequence, it will reproduce not only the sensations, but also the image of the person from whom the odic radiations emanated, since the image, too, is produced by odic vibrations. In a similar manner, our most recent inventions seek to make it possible for us to see the persons with whom we are talking over the telephone. This, too, is based on odic vibrations. The physical processes occur in more material condensation and the spiritual processes in a spiritual form. Prajnastesha and his clairsentient medium showed an average weight loss of 100 grams during the experiments. This, too, is easy to explain, since every surrender of odd is attended by a loss of weight. In Prajnastesha's case, it was due to the fact that he radiated a rather large amount of odd to the medium, while in her case a corresponding loss of odd was caused by receiving and spiritually processing the odic impressions. All work, spiritual as well as any other, involves a certain consumption of odd. It is like playing a phonograph record, for which we require a sufficient amount of power to rotate the disc fast enough to reproduce the sounds recorded on it. All work performed by human beings involves the liberation of odd, which in turn means a loss of weight. If we weigh ourselves before working, and again afterwards, we will find that our weight has decreased in proportion to our exertions, mental or physical, although there may have been no bodily evacuations in the meantime. Even magnetopaths, who treat their patients by magnetization, and in so doing give off some of their odd, undergo a corresponding loss of weight during the process. The foregoing furnishes an explanation of all phenomena of clairsentience, regardless of the form of their occurrence. 234. Part 4. Messages from the Good Spirit World Concerning the Questions of Religion. 235. Introductory Remarks. And they will all be taught by God. John 6:45. The teachings received by me relating to the laws governing spirit communication with the material creation, as well as all my personal experiences in that connection, shed so much light on events related in the Bible that I had not been able to understand theretofore, that all obscurity was dispelled. Moreover, they enabled me to understand many things that I heard or read of afterwards, concerning occurrences of an extraordinary nature. However, the great religious questions were what concerned me most of all. It was with respect to them that I most wanted certainty. I was a clergyman, and had devoted my life to the religious instruction of my fellow believers. Hence, it was but natural that I should be primarily interested in discovering whether everything that I had so far believed and taught was true, or whether among the tenets of my church there were any that were at variance with the truth. Although I could scarcely have foreseen that such discrepancies would prove as numerous and as wide as I subsequently to my great surprise found them to be, I was prepared for some such discovery from the first. In later years I read that the Catholic Church itself and Catholic writers had, in their writings about spiritism, issued urgent warnings against so-called revelation spiritism, that is to say, precisely against that which any earnest seeker after the truth is most particularly desirous of. Whoever, like myself, conducted spiritistic gatherings as genuine divine services in the manner of the early Christians was not looking for spirit phenomena that were as interesting as possible, which is the aim of ordinary occult seances. Rather, I wanted to get in touch with the same good spirit world that had instructed the people of biblical times. It was from this spirit world that I hoped to learn the truth concerning the most important questions of human life. I wanted to be enlightened about the relationships between the here and the beyond. Everything else was of secondary importance to me. Looking at the question from the standpoint of the churches, I could see why they would warn people against a revelation spiritism as practiced by me. For, once we acknowledge the possibility that human beings can be initiated into the full truth by direct communication with God's spirits even. 236. Today, the foundations of the churches begin to totter. Considering their self-contradictory creeds, the churches will then be in danger of losing their adherents, for mankind will no longer have to depend on their clergy in their search for the truth, but will, through their communication with God's spirit world, be in possession of the same direct path to the source of truth that the people of scriptural times had. It is the instinct of self-preservation that drives the churches to oppose spiritism in general and revelation spiritism in particular. The battle waged by them is the same as the battle Herod chose to fight in defense of his kingship when he learned of the birth of the King of the Jews. The battle of the churches against divinely ordained spirit communication will, however, be as futile as was Herod's battle against God's emissary. The truth that the good spirit world can communicate with human beings and enlighten them concerning the great and important questions of the beyond independently of any church or clergy will prevail with mankind. As for the churches, it will one day be said of them, "For they who sought the child's life are dead." Matthew 2:20. What the churches of today are preaching to the ignorant multitude is not the truth. The answers given by God's spirit world to questions about God, God's creation and its fate, about redemption, about Christ, his life and work, about the church and the sacraments, about heaven and hell, and about the origin and final goal of all of creation differ greatly from what today's churches preach. 237. God. Can you attain the original principles of God or fathom the infiniteness of the Almighty? Job 11, 7. You want me to enlighten you concerning God, but what can I tell you that you would understand? You do not understand even the lowest creatures about you, you do not understand yourself even. You cannot comprehend the smallest stone by the wayside, or the most insignificant worm of the fields. You are utterly ignorant of the most commonplace objects that meet your eye, and yet you ask me to teach you about the Supreme Being, to give you understanding of something purely spiritual. That is impossible, seeing that you lack all the concepts required to enable you to grasp these highest of truths, for the ephemeral body weighs down the soul, and its earthly body encumbers the thinking spirit. You hardly fathom what is upon this earth, and only with great effort do you find things that lie right in front of you. But who has penetrated the secrets of heavenly things? Wisdom 9, 15, 16. There is only one thing that each of you can reason out for yourselves by logical thinking: there must be some cause for the existence of everything in creation. Just as it is impossible to conceive of a clock without assuming the existence of a clockmaker, so it is impossible to conceive of the greatest and most accurate timepiece of all, the universe, without assuming the existence of a great master who built this timepiece with its trillions upon trillions of wheels, all of them so perfectly geared and running so accurately that the astronomers of today can calculate what the exact relative positions of the various wheels will be thousands of years from now. The creator of this timepiece, whose greatness surpasses the grasp of the human mind, you call God. It should, therefore, be obvious to everyone that a God must exist, and only fools say in their hearts, "There is no God." Psalm 14, 1. But as to the nature of God, that is something I cannot explain to you, any more than I can explain the cause of the divine existence. It would be like trying to explain the calculations of a planet's orbit to a 4-year-old child, who would naturally lack all knowledge of astronomy and mathematics and of all the principles, formulas and equations involved, if it takes even your greatest astronomer's years to calculate the orbit of a single star. A person unfamiliar with the first inklings of that science would be driven mad if one attempted to teach him something utterly beyond the reach. 238. Of his understanding. In the same way, you would be driven out of your senses if I were to try to fill your mind with ideas that are quite incomprehensible to you and that your understanding could not assimilate.